At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Greetings, sports fans. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Today is Wednesday, February 12th. This is episode 155. We got a show tonight. Please give us a like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look, join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. Drop us some comments. We'll be sure to respond. Tonight, we're talking college basketball. We have just 32 days until selection show. And then we're going to see who gets into the big dance. It comes right after the Super Bowl. It comes really quick. Give us a look tonight. We're going to go around the world of college sports. Then we're going to talk go around the world of sports. Then we're going to talk college hoops. So we'll start with the NFL. So Super Bowl is now, 3 days past. Any post-game, thoughts now that the Super Bowl has been over for 3 days, guys?
I mean, the one thing I'll say is, horrible game plan by Reed. Brutal game by Mahomes, maybe the worst we've ever seen him play. Great game plan by Sirianni, and I thought Fangio had everything figured out. I thought Fangio simply outcoached Reed. Hurts, great in both Super Bowls he's played in, so the moment is never too big for him. Philly deserved to win. They won it. They were the better team all season. Everyone says that Philly was the best team all season. No, everybody thought Detroit was. Detroit was the best team in the NFC and probably the best team in the AFC. Kansas City, talent-wise, was probably never the best team in the AFC overall, but they kept winning games, even though they were close. Just one of those things. Baltimore probably was the most talented team, Buffalo right behind them, and then Kansas City. But Kansas City kept winning. But they didn't show up in the biggest spot of the year. So there you go.
I mean, the difference, I saw is that one-score games, the Chiefs were something like, 11-1 this year in one-score games?
Yep.
And just for comparison, the Jets were like 4-7.
It's a big difference.
I mean, that right there is the difference between a top 10 draft pick and a Super Bowl team.
Yep.
This year.
And just remember that you go back in history and this game's 40-22. This was a 40-6 football game.
This is close.
40-22 makes it look like, and three touchdown passes from Mahomes makes it look like this game had some credibility to it. This was one of the worst Super Bowls I've ever watched.
And that's twice now Mahomes has been blown out.
What do you think it puts him in the GOAT conversation, by the way? Do you think it affects him?
Still behind Brady.
Yeah,
I get that. But understand this. Through the first 7 years of their careers.
Oh, Mahomes is far ahead of Brady.
Mahomes is ahead. And Brady didn't get in there the next 6 years.
Yeah.
So anything Mahomes does in the next 6 years could put it that. But Brady never got blown out. But at the same point in time, they didn't always win because of Brady's offense either. The Giants kind of held him in check, the Marshawn Lynch not getting the ball from the one. There's a lot of things. The Falcons not knowing how to time manage 28-3. Now, I'm not trying to say Mahomes is better than Brady. I'm just saying that time absence makes the heart grow fonder on how great Brady was. We sometimes forget about in the moment. But Mahomes got blitzed.
Now, he got blitzed twice. You know me. I hate Brady. But given this, his three Super Bowl losses, when he left the field in the fourth quarter, his team had the lead in all three.
Yeah.
The last one, they had the ball. They threw three bombs and didn't complete him. He didn't get the ball back and didn't get him down to the field goal range.
But
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, they were all in the game even when they lost.
Very true.
My only takeaway from the game, and it's 3 days later now, is that we never saw the Philadelphia defensive line play like that basically all year. Listen, they had some good games. Don't get me wrong. They played great against Washington the week before, 2 weeks ago before. But we never saw them look that dominant, whether it was against a depleted offensive line they were playing against or just overall having a game like that. So, I want to make sure we throw that in because we never saw that line play like that all year. They came together for a game. They had a fantastic game. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, as far as everything else, Kansas City held Barkley in check. You know, Hurts wasn't he had some yards, but he wasn't running all over the place. But the difference was Kansas City could do nothing offensively against that defensive line. They were running four guys at him, and they never needed to call a blitz. They never needed to drop somebody out of coverage to get to the line. And, you know, for me, I think that's the biggest point for me. Anyway,
I mean, we said Sunday night, the Chiefs defense, even though it says 40 on the scoreboard, they did not play terrible. It was an offense. And Darren all year has said the Chiefs offensive line was bad and struggling, and it showed itself in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Listen, they haven't had a good right tackle since Schwartz retired, and left tackle has always been up in the air. I mean, the best one they had was Brown, but they let him go when they brought in Jawan Taylor to play the right. They haven't had strong tackles. They've kind of survived without it. They were exposed in two Super Bowls for not having good tackles. That's what it comes down to.
Okay. We had one coach hiring following the Super Bowl. Moore goes to the Saints, so he leaves the Eagles. He's now the head coach of the Saints. Any comments, guys, before we just move on real quick?
Youngest coach in the league now. I mean, hey, listen, he's done a good job offensively. We'll see if he can be a leader of men all the way through. You know, we'll find out, you know.
Yep. Okay.
Listen, he had Saquon Barkley, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts. He made a lot out of what he had. They did a good job.
Okay. And the only other NFL point I had was any comments about the Jets, what looks like them parting ways with Aaron Rodgers?
As a Jet fan, I don't know where we go for quarterback. I mean, listen, I'd like to see Jordan Travis get an opportunity to get looked at. We don't know what he is. I mean, there's nobody you're going to draft at seven that's going to fall to you that's going to be worth it. And I don't even love the first two guys anyway. The free agent class is weak as at best. You're going to go back to Sam Darnold, who we saw. If you blitz him, he holds on to the ball too long. You're going to go to Justin Fields, who has not been able to secure a job anywhere, or Russell Wilson, or Kirk Cousins, who looks so good in Atlanta, he got benched. I mean, I don't know where you go. So now you're sitting there saying, oh, the Jets are trying to build character and team. And I get that. But, you know, now they're making it a little bit more about rebuilding already with a defense that you felt like if they got a little motivation might be pretty good. Because there was some talent there. Now you waste another year of Garrett Wilson. You waste another year of Breece Hall. You waste another year of Quinnen Williams. You waste another year of Sauce Gardner. And you don't have an answer at QB. Now, listen, Sam Darnold was a reclamation that turned into something special. Could the Jets do that? Absolutely. The old line seemed like it was coming together, but it's unlikely. There's more often than not, that doesn't happen.
Kev, what do you think, Kev?
If they're not going to bring back Rodgers, I'd almost look to see what you can get for some of these guys, Wilson and Hall and Sauce. And, you know, if you're not bringing back Rodgers, go full rebuild at this point. Because, like Darren said, there's no quarterback that I want out there in the free agency. I understand there are salary cap reasons why, looking ahead to the future years, that you don't bring Rodgers back. I don't know how much Rodgers wants to come back with a new offensive coordinator. They're talking about putting restrictions on him, things like he's not going to be able to do the Pat McAfee show weekly during the season. You know, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes there. But if you're not bringing back Rodgers, like Darren said, there's no quarterback I want in the top of the draft. You know, you got stopgap guys. You know,
yep.
Yeah, you bring in Fields. You bring in Fields for a year. You have him with Taylor as a backup. I don't know if Travis will be ready off the injury.
Or if he's even the answer, we don't know.
Yeah, listen, it's exactly what you said, though, Kev. If you're going to do that, why would you not keep Rodgers for the 1 year at that point? I mean,
he said he was willing to rework the deal, but listen.
Eventually, you got to get hit with this cap charge.
Yeah.
Do it now, do it later. I don't know.
So, okay. So the reports all make it seem like it was the Pat McAfee thing was a big deal. We don't know. None of us were in the room. No. Diana Rossini, who never says anything nice about the Jets, wasn't in the room, but she can't wait to rip the organization. Oh, yeah. I don't know why she's allowed on the campus, by the way, but it's just me. But yeah. But the simple fact is that, you know, the Jets might have went into it with open arms and said, hey, listen, you know, we'd like you to cut back on a couple of these things. And Roger said, absolutely no way. Or the Jets might have went into it just being a little prickish and just saying, hey, listen, you know, we don't like any of the things you're doing. This thing is this thing. We don't know what the tone was in the meeting.
Okay.
So unless we do that, it's very hard to say. But I thought Rodgers gave the team the best chance of being competitive next year.
Yeah, you're right.
Now they don't have that chance. Now they don't have a chance, I don't think.
Any other football points, guys, before we move on?
No, on to the draft. Right. That's it.
Right. Let's hit baseball real quick. So Kershaw re-signed with the Dodgers. Kenley Jansen goes to the Angels. And last week we mentioned it while we were actually on the air. Pete Alonso re-signed with the Mets. Still a bunch of free agents out there. You know, Bregman, Justin Turner, Robinson, J.D. Martinez, Pivetta, Heaney. There's still some bigger name free agents still out there. Bregman probably being the biggest of the group. But Kev, we didn't really get a chance to hit on it. Any thoughts on Alonso going back to the Mets?
Oh, thankfully he's back. I mean, every Mets fan wants him back. Yeah, he might strike out a little too much for some people's likes. You know, maybe he's not as clutch as you want him to be. I'm not one of those guys. I love Pete. You know, he's a power hitter hitting behind Soto now. Now you get, you know, Soto and Lindor at the top and Pete in the middle. He's got to have guys on base all the time. You throw in Nimmo. Vientos hopefully builds on last year, and last year was not the fluke. You're hoping for Alvarez to bounce back a little bit from last year. Your center field is fine with Taylor and Siri. Now you've opened up second base. Right now it's McNeil. You've got some of the young kids, you know, Acuna. Throw Beatty in the mix. You've got Winker and Marte at DH. I mean, the lineup is set. There's not much of a hole in the lineup.
This was, you know, the same point that we brought up basically a month ago, which was if you don't sign Alonso, where the hell else are you getting 3,100? I mean, you're getting 3,100 from the guy.
Oh, yeah.
In a down year, he hits 240. In a good year, he hits 270. He's going to knock it 100. He sits right in the middle of your damn lineup. Where else are you getting that? I mean, you know.
There was nobody out there that was going to replace those numbers.
No.
And I don't even think Christian Walker replaces the numbers the same way. I know he had a good year last year. I don't think everyone that loved Christian Walker, I don't even think he replaces the numbers.
Walker in Yankee Stadium, come close.
But not at City.
Yes, those numbers, 3,100, have been without Soto in the lineup. Maybe exactly. Soto with a little protection gives him an extra 5 home runs in this, you know, the way this works out. I mean, you know, for me it's a no brainer. I, you know.
Yeah.
Early thoughts, yeah, exactly. Kev. How do you start the lineup off for the Mets? Who are your first five?
I want, you know, with the way he showed last year and he's done it in Cleveland well, I would still keep Lindor leadoff. I know the Mets want to split up the lefties. I'd rather see Nimmo 2, then Soto, Pete, and Vientos.
Okay.
That's the way I would rather see it. I think Soto always seems like he wants to be in the 2 spot.
I don't think he cares, do you?
If he doesn't care, I want him 3. I'll take, especially if Nimmo goes back to near to the top of the lineup, I'm going to get my 380 on base. Because that's what he was for the 5 years before last year. Consistently 380 on base. Base runners all over the place. I mean, there's no reason why the Mets are not going to be up 1-0 in the first inning most games.
If Alvarez bounces back, the bottom of that order gets really strong too, and that's the guy you're banking. The guy I'm banking on anyway.
Yep.
I like him. So something interesting just happened. Nick Pivetta is now going to sign with the Padres.
Oh, okay.
I believe that either Cease or King will be dealt.
Yep.
I think the Mets are in play for either one of those guys.
Mets are in play. Yep.
But I can't see the Padres just adding Pivetta without dealing one of those guys. I think Pivetta makes it cheaper and. 4 years, $55 million is what it's rumored to be, according to what just came across my phone.
I want Cease.
Well, I
want the ace.
To be honest, I like King better, but I can see why. Watching Cease in big games, I don't like him. Just watching him pitch in big games, I don't love him. I like King's stuff a little bit more, but I mean, in the big spot, but I'd see why you like Cease.
Well, listen,
great pitcher. It reminds me of Peavy a little bit.
For the Mets, I think Cease is the better pitcher for that group anyway. Because all of a sudden now you slot him in and he is your number one. You start this off as him is your one. There's no questions. Yep. And you go from there and hopefully Senga comes back and he's your two. and Manaea and the whole group bang bang falls in play. So I kind of like it if that's the case, but we'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I didn't expect that because the Padres have been signing guys like Jason Hayward, so I didn't expect them to actually make a real signing, you know, which usually is not very much the style of, you know, A.J. Preller. So there you go.
Any other baseball points?
No, pitches and catches. Dominguez looks like the Yankees are really saying that he's going to be have every opportunity to win the left field job, which we all thought. And Senga kind of asked for a dome the other day, so that was interesting. Do you want a dome, Kev?
No.
Okay.
I like outdoor baseball.
And now they're talking six-man rotation with the Mets. I don't know if, like, they acquire a Cease, that changes anything. I'm just curious, but there you go.
I think even if they acquire a Cease, it's the five-and-a-half-man rotation.
Nope, I get it.
You know Cease will go every six-day period, and then you throw in the other guys, you know, saying go off the injury. You know, I think you keep Manaea a little fresher down the stretch there. He faded right at the very end of the season there. Maybe he's a little stronger throughout. You know, you got Peterson and Holmes and guys like that who have not thrown anywhere near 170 innings in a year. So.
Okay. All right. We'll move over to NBA. Any NBA points? I know the Lakers trade was rescinded with Mark Williams, so they went out and signed 7-foot Alex Len.
Yeah, the Kings had released him when they picked up their big guy. So they let him go, and the Lakers, you know, it's a smart move for them just to give themselves some size and depth.
We've got the All-Star break after the games on Thursday the 13th. You know, we went in depth pretty well the last 2 weeks ago. Cleveland's still on top by 5.5. Celtics are there. Knicks are 8 back. And then there's a huge drop-off to Indy, who are 5.5 behind the Knicks. Knicks with a big win last night against Indy. You know, Cat pours in 40, Hart pours in 30. It's looking more and more and more like if you get to the second round, it's Celtics-Knicks, and it's Cleveland against whichever team survives. Indy, Milwaukee, Detroit all separated by 2 games out there.
Interesting stat on the Knicks. Just Josh Hart, I should say. So a couple of days ago was the 2-year anniversary of the Knicks trade for Josh Hart. In the 2 years since the trade was made, there are only 2 NBA players that have grabbed more than 1,500 rebounds, dished out 500 assists, and had 200 steals. Nikola Jokic and Josh Hart.
Wow.
To understand what kind of rarefied air this guy could be in for a guy that doesn't necessarily score the ball very well.
Yeah.
And out west, we still got OKC still hot. They've won 6 in a row. They're up 7.5 in that conference. I mean, you know, you've got Denver. They've won 7 in a row. They haven't picked up any ground. You've got Memphis, Denver, Lakers, and Houston sitting there in a group, and then the big drop-off there. And the other night, Kevin Durant, the 8th player in NBA history to reach 30,000 points.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We saw Luka make his debut.
Yep, good game.
In a Luka uniform. And anything to say about the Mavs karma between them losing Anthony Davis and Daniel Gafford in basically back-to-back games?
Well, the Anthony Davis thing, he was having such a monster first game for them.
Yeah.
And for him to go down and be out multiple weeks really hurts. And then Gafford, who's a nice player for them.
Yeah.
You know, it's just basically saying that, you know, Dallas getting punished for trading a top 3 to top 5 player in the NBA for an aging guy that's been injured in his past and is injured again.
You know, you've got this new owner of the Mavericks, because you remember Cuban did sell his controlling interest there.
Yes, he did.
And, you know, you hear some of the rumors that she wanted to do a big thing in Dallas with the casino around it too and everything else, and Dallas came back and said no. And now you almost have, to me, it's almost like vibes of either Major League or Ted Lasso, where she says, oh, I want out. I've got Vegas calling me. I'm going to do everything I can to bottom out this franchise so I can move.
Yeah.
Back then, the movie's so old, it was Miami. They didn't have a baseball team. She was moving to Miami and getting membership to the country club.
The Cleveland Indians out of there. That's how old the movie was. It was the Cleveland Indians.
Cleveland Indians. Yeah. There was no baseball in Florida yet.
Yep.
All right. NHL, they hit their All-Star break. Only 2 teams are above 80 points at this point. Winnipeg, who's won 8 in a row, and Washington, they're at 80. Winnipeg's at 81. Everyone else has 72 points or less at the moment. And the Four Nations tournament started tonight. At the moment, Canada is beating Sweden 2-0 as we speak. That's in the middle of the second period. Any NHL points, guys?
The only one I would make is that I still think that they should have had some sort of Eastern European team. I feel like you're leaving a lot of stars out of it if you don't have guys from the Czech Republic or Poland or Russia, obviously, or any of the former countries of the Soviet Union. I do think you miss out on it. Just one man's opinion.
And not only okay. that, but you started the break February 9th, and they don't resume regular season until February 22nd.
Yep.
What the hell is that?
It's preparation for the
Olympics next year, I guess. The
Olympics next year, that's what it is.
It's kind of
getting back into the flow of doing it. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, the Devils are still safely in the playoffs right now. The Rangers at 58 points, Islanders 57 points. They sit 3 and 4 points behind Detroit, but they still have Columbus and Boston between them. It's gonna be a dogfight when they come out.
Okay,
this is when hockey gets interesting. You know, you get in March, April, you know, going in and see who needs the 2 points every night. That's when it gets kind of fun.
All right. Darren, you had a golf point you want to touch on?
No, just the waste management. I'm sure Kev caught a little bit too. It wasn't much of a tournament. Thomas Dietrich from Belgium hadn't won one since 2017. Hadn't won a tournament, but he won this one. Won it going away.
Yeah.
Justin Thomas had a real nice moment. Sinking one from the fairway on the people's hole. And I got the huge eruption from the crowd. And you know, that's what makes the waste management fun. You just have a bunch of beer drinking, people yelling, and everybody having a good time. It's like watching Happy Gilmore for one whole year. And the players, for the most part, seem to enjoy it. Not all, but most of them seem to embrace it. That's what makes the waste management kind of special. Any other points on that for you, Kev?
Nah, I mean, that's 16th. The grandstands the whole way down. It's a par three. I mean, no better atmosphere in golf. As long as the fans don't get obnoxious.
Well, we saw
there's the thing being rowdy and loud and having a good time. A little too much beer. They cross the line a few times. That's when they get a little pissy.
We did see them get obnoxious on the hole in one.
But, you know, you want that. And Thomas was all pumped up, too. Yeah. Listen, you couldn't have a tournament like this in the Northeast.
No.
The fans wouldn't be able to handle it. So it's perfect in Phoenix. It's not that it's completely laid back, but it's just it's a fun hole.
Yep.
Genesis this weekend is supposed to be Tiger playing, but he's, I'm not trying to insult him. He's just not past the death of his mom yet, and he just needed a little bit more time to process it, according to his words, process it. Yep. So, so he's not going to play this week. As we always say, golf is always better when Tiger's in the field.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. All right, Darren, horse racing.
Yeah, just a quick update, all right? There's 95 horses that currently have odds for the Derby. Did that for you, Gino. There's only a few of them. I'm just going to mention a couple of them just so that you know who's out there. All the big preparations will be coming up really early March into April as we kind of get into who's going to be in the Derby. Right now the favorite is a horse called Barnes, 10-1. He won the Grade 2 San Vicente, trained by Baffert. You have a horse like Citizen Bull who won the Juvenile Grade 1 at the Breeders' Cup. Also a Baffert horse. He also just won the Robert Lewis Stakes.
Citizen Bull, any relation to Holy Bull?
Yes.
And that bloodline. Hey, look at that.
Yes. And I'm trying to remember who Barnes was, and I'm forgetting about it. Disco Time, who beat Bilt, who's another good horse. He's 20-1. The first two horses were 10-1. Is 20-1. He just won the LeCompte. He's trained by Brad Cox. And the other horse I'll mention is Sovereignty, winner of the Grade 3 Street Sense at Churchill. He's 20-1 also, trained by Bill Mott. So there's a few different trainers that are out there. Again, there's 95 horses that have odds at this point. Yep. That number will drop dramatically. Obviously, based on the point system, there'll be 20 that qualify. Usually there's 3 or 4, subs in case a horse has to drop out. We'll get more into it as the major races come up, and we'll let you know what to look for as we get toward the Derby. Back to you, G.
All right. So it's college basketball time for us. 32 days until the selection show. We're going to go through some of the teams right now. We're going to tell you who we think is probably in or out at the moment, maybe who's on the bubble. We're not going to go deep, but we are going to go conference by conference. Darren, where do you want to start?
Well, just – real quick, just we're going to talk about a couple of things. One of them is the quads and how many wins a team has. So just so everybody knows how the net, which is one of the tools that's utilized, comes up with their rankings. So if you're going to get a quad one victory at home, you have to be ranked in the top 30. The opponent has to be in the top 30 if you're a home team, okay? If it's neutral court, which was earlier in the season, it's the top 50. And away, it's the top 75. So if you're ranked 73rd in the net, you beat that team on the road, you get a quad one win. Quad two is 31-75. Neutral was 51-100. And the way was 76-135. So you could be team 130, still qualify for a quad two. The numbers have stretched out a lot this year.
Yeah.
Quad three and four are way down the list. At home, 76-160. Neutral, 101-200. Away, 135-240. And then quad four, we don't have to get into. It's everything else. So when we talk about net, usually it's really the major tool. They talk about BPI a little bit, but it's really the net that they really talk about. And that's kind of what we will be studying a little bit as we get closer to the tournament, where teams have what their records are, what the eye test tells us, what their net tells us, and who's healthy and all the other fun stuff that goes on.
General knowledge, Darren, for everybody out there, when we say a net number, if they're a bubble team, what do we want their net to be around?
You want to be inside 50 at this point.
Yep.
Okay. You could still be competitive 50 and down. Like a team like Villanova, and we're going to get into them in a little bit because they won tonight, had a big win against St. John's. They went into today at 52. Mm-hmm. The win against St. John's is going to move them into the 40s.
Yep.
Right? A team like Wake Forest, who went in at 60 but had great numbers, lost tonight to Florida State at home, blew a 16-point lead. They lost the quad three home game.
Yeah.
They are going to drop into like the 80s or probably the 70s. But that's because that's a quad three loss. So that's just a couple of examples of where that stuff will go. So Wake was on the outside looking in with the quads, and now they're really on the outside looking in with the quads.
All right. Just looking at that, you know, when you talk about those type of quad numbers in Wake to me was right around my 68th or 69th team.
Yeah, exactly. Before
tonight. Now they lose to Florida State. Bad loss.
At home.
And everything else. At home, they're going to be outside. I've got somebody else to find to put in.
Exactly. Darren, what conference do you want to start at, Darren?
Well, first, I just want to go through real quick, just so everybody's aware of the teams that are in it. There are a bunch of leagues that'll be one bid, okay? Real quick. So just, you're never going to get a second bid out of this conference, so don't even dream about it. It's just one of those things. So the America East, the A-Sun, the Big Sky, the Big South, the CAA, the Conference USA, Horizon, Ivy, MAC, MEAC, Mid-American, Northeastern, Ohio Valley, Patriots, Southern, Southland, SWAC, Summit, Sunbelt, and WAC, they will get one bid automatically. A couple of these conferences that I'm going to name might get a second bid, and they're going to sound weird. The American Athletic.
Yep.
Hey, Memphis right now would be the only team I have in. They have a net of 45, wins over Ole Miss, wins over Clemson, wins over UConn, and wins over Missouri.
And they're top 20 in the AP polls.
Yep. And yet their net is 45. I don't know how they calculate this, right? North Texas is the next best team. Their net is 58 with no good wins. So unless Memphis doesn't win the conference tournament, that conference will get one. If they don't, Memphis should get in for their record.
Especially if it's somebody like North Texas, who's at least a top 60 net. If they go through, they win the conference championship, especially if they beat Memphis in the finals. If Memphis gets to their finals and has good enough net rankings and 25-3 type record, they're going to get in as second team.
Yeah, the funny part about it is like a matchup like that, and we'll get into it if it gets closer and it happens, you have a team that plays in the 50s against a team that plays in the 90s. So those are always the fun ones about who controls tempo. Yep. The Missouri Valley right now will just have one bid. Now, Drake's net is 57.
That's the one. Go ahead.
But they beat Vandy on a neutral site, which is a good win.
Yeah.
And they had one bad week to start the year. They lost two games that they shouldn't have lost, but they're 20-2. So if they run the table and they get to 26-2 and they win two games in the tournament, get to 28-2 and lose in the final 28-3, even though their net may not be top 50, they would have to get consideration. Not saying they'd be a lock. They can't afford to lose a game until the final.
It'd be hard pressed to keep them out.
Well, if they have only three losses and two of them were like just in a bad week,
the big especially when you start getting into, you know, the 13th or 14th place SEC team, or the 10th or 11th place Big 12 team, as we get to that a little bit later.
Yep. Yeah. Two more conferences to go, then we'll get to the big ones. The Big West, UC San Diego has a net of 50 with a nice big win against Utah State. UC Irvine has a net of 62. They have no big wins except they won at UC San Diego. UC San Diego also won at UC Irvine. So, listen, I feel like UC San Diego, if they run the table as well, could be the same thing. They lose to Irvine at the end. Their net's in the low 50s probably, and then the win against Utah State would be consideration. There's no lock here, but it would be consideration. I think they'd have four losses, so something to look at. And then the last one would be the Atlantic 10, where VCU has got a net of 37, but they don't have any great wins. They didn't beat anybody.
Yep.
George Mason has a net of 63. They started 2-3. Now they're 19-5. That would be the only other team that could get considered. If George Mason would have beat VCU in the final again, they might get two. But conferences that we're used to seeing two or three teams, like the AAC, sometimes even four, like the Atlantic 10, they're one-bid leagues if the champ doesn't win it. You know, yep. If the champ wins it, I should say. And even without it, these teams could get skipped. So that's kind of where we sit with the smaller conferences. The big conferences are going to own the tournament this year, guys.
I completely agree with you. And for me, at this point, the only one of those one big conferences that somebody probably has a shot at is if Memphis loses. And maybe they wind up knocking somebody else out with, you know, by getting in. I do think Drake is right there. I agree with you. You know, if VCU doesn't win the A-10, they may have a shot. But for the most part, I think that's it, Darren. I think you're right on the button with this.
It's really hard. So now to get into the – I just want to start – I'm going to go with the Power Conference dead last. I'm going to do the SEC last, all right?
Okay. Yep.
But let's start with the West Coast Conference right now.
Okay.
So Gonzaga and St. Mary's both appear to be locks, in my opinion. I don't know if you guys see the same way.
I see the same way.
Wait,
Santa Clara has got a net of 54. San Francisco 60. I think they're out. Sorry, G.
It was Gonzaga and St. Mary's.
Yep.
Yeah, I have St. Mary's. I think, I mean, Gonzaga's net is so low at 14 that it's going to be hard. But I think you got to watch between them and San Fran. Which one of those teams has a good stretch here? Because I don't know that Gonzaga is necessarily a lock at this point. With a 14 net,
that's hard not to.
Well, here's the interesting thing about Gonzaga: 2-6 against Quad One.
Yeah.
3-1 against Quad Two, and 13-0 against 3-4. So again, if they lost another one,
I have them in, by the way.
I still think their net is good enough, though.
At this moment, I have them in, but I'm just saying it's just something to watch because their records are very comparable, Gonzaga and San Francisco, right now. So
San Francisco's 1-4 against the Quad One also, but their net's sitting at 60, and that's the issue. St. Mary's, I think, is a lock, actually.
I agree.
4-2 against Quad One, a 19 net. I mean, there's nothing not to like about St. Mary's. They're a good team. They beat Gonzaga last time out. They'll play him again too. So that's the league I would say two. If Santa Clara or San Francisco get hot, you never know. Win a couple of upsets in the semifinals of the conference tournament, we could see. Mountain West.
Okay.
I don't have anybody as a lock.
No.
But I would lean toward New Mexico and Utah State looking really good, and either Boise or San Diego getting the third. I don't think they get more than three this year, guys. That's my look at it right now.
No. I agree with you. I think Utah State and New Mexico are the two that are comfortably in, but not
I would agree with that.
You know, I'm talking, you know, 8-9 seeds.
Yep.
San Diego State, Boise State right now are running the bubble. I've got them outside, but, you know, a couple of good wins against, you know, these other top teams could put them right into the tournament.
I actually have San Diego State in at the moment.
I
will tell you this. I think they will wind up getting a third. I don't know who it's going to be, though, between San Diego State, Colorado State, Boise State. I think one of those three winds up getting in, but I do have three coming in from them.
The interesting thing about New Mexico is if you happen to be a St. John's fan from our area, Richard Pitino coaches New Mexico.
Yes.
And Rick is 72, you might be looking at the next St. John's coach if Rick has anything to say about it. So they play a faster pace. They're a little bit more offensive-minded than his dad, but at the same point in time, they also play good defense. Utah State's had a miracle season. No one expected them to be this good. New Mexico's always pretty good. San Diego State's been a little bit down, but they've been up for so long. I would give them the nod as the third over Boise State, even though their net is a little weaker at this point, but we'll see how that turns out.
Yep.
Then let's go to the ACC, which has been a real dump this year, right?
Yeah, it really has.
We might as well go to the worst, which is with the ACC. But Duke is kind of done. They're in. They're a lock. They're a great team.
They're one seed more than likely,
barring some sort of collapse. Well,
if worst case, there are two.
So now the second best team in this league is Clemson, who lost to the worst team in the SEC, South Carolina. Not an insult to South Carolina, just telling you how good the SEC is.
Yeah.
And they are borderline lock, and I think the win over Duke really kind of helped cement them.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you.
I would agree.
The third team that's a lock is Louisville, which Pat Kelsey has done an amazing job getting this team up and down. The net is 29.
I would agree.
4-5 against quad one, 5-1 against quad two. So they've been pretty solid overall.
I've got them like that notch below lock, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 13 that should be in. And then you get a bunch of teams that are mediocre at best. So you get SMU, who people look at, 0-4 against quad one. Pitt, 1-8 against quad one. North Carolina, 1-10 against quad one. And their only win was because UCLA couldn't hit a foul shot. Bruins are up double digits with like 3 minutes to go and kept missing foul shots. And Wake, 1-6 against quad one. But they just had their worst loss of the season to Florida State at home tonight, which is a quad three loss. So none of these teams, so these four teams combined, if they get a fourth team, are 1-2-3-28 against quad one opponents.
Wow.
Okay. So Wake has beaten Pitt in North Carolina, but they were both at home. Wake goes to SMU this weekend, which is probably part of the reason they lose this game tonight, looking a little bit past it for the bigger matchup. Pitt got blown out by SMU last night. North Carolina beat Pitt the other day. I mean, this is an ACC that could legitimately get three teams, guys.
Yeah.
Right now, I have a fourth in, but it's lukewarm. I have SMU in. It's really tough.
I have SMU. I had Wake. Like I said, right as my 68th. Not anymore.
I have SMU in because of their net of 36. I actually had Wake in before Villanova won tonight. So I actually moved Wake out and put Nova in with that win. But
right now
I have four from the ACC.
I have four as well, but SMU is a fleeting team that has to beat somebody good, in my opinion.
Yep.
The Big East will go next, where St. John's has had the resurgence. And the interesting stat about St. John's this week is St. John's is at the highest-ranked Big East team in an in-season AP poll for the first time since January 28,
1991.
Wow. They've never been the best Big East team since 91. I know they haven't been ranked since 99, 2000, but 91 was the last time they were the highest-ranked Big East team. And they lost tonight. And it was a very weird game. G, you were watching it.
I was.
Great comeback by the Johnnies. They were down double digits. They stormed 11. Back. It was uncharacteristic because Nova shot over 50% from the floor, which doesn't happen against St. John's a lot. But they were hitting shots. St. John's hit more threes tonight than they normally do, G. So it was a very interesting game. Neither team shot great from the line or poorly. St. John's 6-10, Nova 10-13. But that was a must-win for Nova. So when I look at the Big East right now, St. John's, Marquette, Creighton, and UConn, I have all in good shape.
Yep.
Agreed.
Villanova and Xavier fight for a fifth spot. Villanova beat Xavier the other night at home. Xavier had beaten Villanova at their place. So it's not unlikely that it's not like one is much better than the other, but Villanova just had a quality win tonight, which probably moves them into the 40s. So I probably lean toward them having a good shot of getting in right now off that. Their loss to Creighton the other day was ridiculous. Ashworth hit a side three-pointer that banked home. I mean, it wasn't even accurate. He just kind of beat him at the gun. So Nova's playing a lot better. St. John's is – listen, this is a fun team to watch, guys. I don't know if Gino, who's not always going to watch a primetime Friday night game was on to the St. John's UConn game last week.
It was a good game, too. I actually have Nova in right now. They are my 67th team.
Okay.
I'll get to my 68th in a couple of minutes, but they're my 67th. And basically, I just switched them in and took Wake out. You'll both, when we get there, you'll understand why in a couple of minutes. But so, sure. Yeah, so at the moment, I have five from the Big East. You know, honestly, if you told me Nova or Xavier winds up getting in, okay. If you told me they didn't wind up getting in, okay. I think, you know, the top four are the ones that are in, and everybody else is kind of question marks, the next couple of question marks. And I mean, I don't even think with the Big East, if there's anybody else that has a shot. I mean, is there anybody else
you think has a shot? Somebody would have to go on an amazing run the table, win a couple of big quad one wins down the stretch, and get to, like, at least the semifinal of the Big East tournament. They need a lot to happen for, like, a Providence or a Georgetown to emerge. You know, the one thing I'll say, watching St. John's and a few of the other teams, but watching St. John's in particular is why I love college basketball. I mean, the difference in the 6 seconds in the shot clock allows a coach to kind of control tempo so much different than it does in the NBA. It just does. Yeah. So you get a coach like Patino who makes a comment like, I just pray when we're playing on offense. I want to punch somebody in the face when we're playing offense, but I want to win the game on the defensive side of the floor. And it's five fouls, not six. And there's no advance to the half court. And everything can be controlled. Coaches can control style of play in a different manner than you can in the NBA. I'm not saying the NBA coaches aren't superior. I'm not saying that they're not great. It's just a different animal. NBA is drive and dish for the open three. College, St. John's doesn't have a three-point shooting team. They win with the mid-range.
Yep.
They win with the mid-range. And there's a couple teams like that. Wake, who lost tonight, is a mid-range team. They don't shoot well from three. There are teams that can't do it. Other teams like Alabama, that's all they do. But you look at like St. John's, and they win games in the mid-range, and it's kind of fun to watch.
The other thing St. John's does horribly is free throws. I mean, you know, they don't hit good free throws. They can't hit three-pointers. What they do well is it's the mid-range shot, and it is defense. They are a defensive force to be reckoned with on the board, steals. They're as our friend Clyde would say, they are tenacious on the boards.
And vivacious. So right. Now let's get to the third strongest conference. I'll call that the Big 12 at this point.
Okay.
All right. Yep. So Iowa State, Houston, Arizona, Texas Tech, and Kansas to me are all locks.
Oh, yeah.
I think Baylor is just about a lock, in my opinion.
Yep.
All right. Wait. All five of those teams you just mentioned, yes. Iowa State, Kansas, Houston, Arizona, they all have nets of 11 or less. Yep. I mean, that's how high up they are.
They're
so
locks.
I agree. I think those are locks at this point.
Baylor is close. They're in the 20s. I mean, and usually in the 20s, you'd say lock. Like, we're giving locks to ACC teams in the 20s, and we're not doing it for Baylor. I don't know why.
I think
because they're six.
We all have them in. Yeah. The next interesting one is BYU, who beat West Virginia on the road last night. I have them in as well as a seven team. Yeah. And then you have West Virginia, Cincinnati, and then a very interesting team that's not on the bubble yet but working their way toward it in Kansas State. And the only reason why I comment on Kansas State is because in the last – they were 7-11. They went into Ames and won at Iowa State by 20. They beat Kansas, and last night they beat Arizona. So now suddenly this team is playing well. Now, listen, they're still 13-11. And they have to go to that dreaded Utah trip. They got to go to BYU in Utah. So you never know what happens in this trip. But it's a team that's not on the bubble. I don't have them anywhere near the bubble yet. But they've gone from dead. This is like one of those Big East things you were talking about. What a team has to do. They're doing it right now.
So here's my only thing with the Big 12, right? I have the same seven in. I have an eighth team in West Virginia. And if I start comparing them against Kansas State, just the net by itself.
Oh, it's a
West Virginia's 43, and K-State is 70. Kansas State was
over 100 a week ago. That's the reason why I'm saying that they're on their way down. Now, I'm not saying they're going to get there. West Virginia is that team.
You'll have to watch them, though.
Now, West Virginia, for the people that watched last year the tournament but may not watch every game, Coach DeVries, he was the guy that coached Drake last year. So this is a fun team. He's done a great job rebuilding that squad. And for them, they're 5-6 against quad one, 1-3 against quad two. So the quad two record, not great, but the quad one record is really strong at 5-6 in that conference. So I don't have West Virginia in yet, but I have seven teams in strong.
Here's one stat you have to be careful with BYU about. Non-conference strength of schedule.
Yep.
288.
Awful.
And we've seen that the last couple of years, you know, Pitt, Wake, Seton Hall, Indiana State, you know, teams that have not had – and they've been better than these numbers, this number that BYU has for non-conference. And, you know, if BYU's got to make sure they are in and not even in discussion for the last four. If they're in a discussion there on that bubble and they're looking to split fine hairs there, that 288 could come in huge.
And just remember, 3-5 against quad one for BYU, 3-3 against quad two. So it's not like they've been tearing it up. They're 6-8 against the two top quads. They're 10-0 on the back end. On the other side, Baylor, by the way, 4-8 against quad one. 4-0 against quad two. So they're 8-8 combined. But 4-8 for a team that with a net of 26 is pretty interesting to me.
Yep.
Yeah, Cincinnati is actually the team that's closer than to me than Kansas State as well. But they're 1-7 against quad one. So that really kind of hurts them in my eyes.
Yeah.
Now we get to the Big Ten. And okay. The Big 12 is a little bit of top heavy. The Big Ten has more depth to it, in my opinion, which is the reason why I put them as the second best conference. So it's just like football, they're the second fiddle to the SEC in regular season play anyway. But yep. To me, Purdue, Illinois, Wisconsin, Maryland, Michigan, Michigan State, UCLA are all in really great shape.
Yep.
Ohio State and Oregon have good enough numbers, not amazing records, but they're right there. Nebraska alive as well.
Yep.
I think that this is a conference that legitimately could get 10.
I've got 10 right now for them.
Me too. I have all 10 in. So who do you have out? Nebraska, G?
I have Ohio State out.
Okay. Well, again, their record's not great, G, so it's a legit point.
I think they're going to get at least 9, and I think we know the 7 that are almost definitely getting in. And then for me, Nebraska, Oregon, Ohio State, USC, 2 of those are going to probably get in, and that's where I got my 9. So although I have Nebraska in right now, it wouldn't surprise me if one of the other teams, you know, flipped in and out over the next, you know, month. But I have 9 at the moment.
I have 10, which I didn't want to have 10, but I have 10 right now. So we're gonna see, because again, these teams start beating each other up. Teams have tough road losses. You know, anything can kind of happen.
Yeah, a little bit outside the bubble and tournament discussion. The interesting game the other night was Michigan State at Indiana. Tom Izzo had a chance to break Bobby Knight's record for career Big Ten victories, and Indiana upsets Michigan State, keeps him from breaking Knight's record at Indiana. Just one of those interesting little things.
And this Friday, Indiana gets UCLA. So if they beat Michigan State and UCLA back-to-back, their neck could be in the top 50, and all of a sudden they could be a team that gets in that 10 spot. Yep. And maybe somebody else falls out. Oregon had a little bit of a slump. You know, Nebraska doesn't do great on the road. There's a lot of different things that we can look at as we go forward with that. Maryland, who everybody wanted to run Willard out of town last year, now they're – you know what I mean? Everybody's like, oh, what a mistake it was to bring him in as our coach. Nope, he's doing just fine. And Maryland's a pretty damn good team.
Yeah.
And then we get to
Maryland's another one, 347 on conference this year.
Oh, they played nobody.
Yeah.
They did beat Villanova, though.
So before you get to the SEC, my 68 team in right now is San Francisco. And I bring that up because as we get to the SEC, I kind of drew a line in the sand somewhere. Okay, so and that's the reason why I think I have a couple of these other teams in throughout what we've been.
Where was your line, Gino? What number?
Here's what I did. For the SEC, I basically drew the line that if you don't have more than 3 conference wins at the moment, I'm not putting you in, which means for me, it got me 12 in before today. Okay. So because I only put 12 in, Kev, it opened up a couple of spots, and that's why I have that's why I had Wake before Nova. Now I have Nova in, and I have San Francisco in. So that was just the line I drew in the sand at the moment, because although we're going to go through this now, there's going to have to be a lot.
Splitting hairs line, G. These teams are close.
I get it, but at some point, right, over the next month, they're going to play four more games, basically, before the conference tournament starts. Six, okay, excuse me, right? So if some of these teams wind up going 3-10 in conference, or, you know, you're going to have to draw a line somewhere. I hear you. I get it. But, you know, you can't be taking teams that have four wins in conference. They're 4-12 in conference. Listen, for the moment, I had to draw the line in the sand. That's where I drew the line. Okay, so it still got me 12 in.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm pretty confident that the 12 are in.
It's still a record.
Well, here's the thing. So let's get the locks in. Let's get the locks in, okay?
We all
have Auburn. We all have Tennessee. We all have Florida. We all have Alabama. We all have Texas A&M. We all have Kentucky. We all have Ole Miss, and we all have Missouri. Is it safe to say those eight are in for everybody?
Yeah.
Locked.
Locked in for all eight to me.
They are locked in, those eight.
Now, Mississippi State is close to being in there, but not quite, because they've been blown out a couple of times. So I have them in, but that's my nine, okay?
Yep.
I have Texas in as my 10, despite getting blown out by Alabama last night. I have Vanderbilt in as my 11, and I have Arkansas in as my 12. I have Georgia and Oklahoma out. And the other two teams, LSU and South Carolina, aren't in discussion. And Georgia beat St. John's. So that's a weird one to take out. But I haven't been impressed with them in conference play.
So at the moment, you only have 12 in also.
Absolutely. Same as you, pal.
Okay, so my only change on that, I have Georgia in and Arkansas out. But I think we're only because Arkansas is one of the teams that only has three wins in conference. So that was my line in the sand.
Yeah, so Georgia's 2-9 against quad one. Arkansas's 3-7. It was really splitting hairs. Vanderbilt 2-6. I mean, these three teams, and Texas 3-8. I mean, these four teams are all splitting hairs. Everybody else, Missouri's 4-6, Mississippi State 5-6, Ole Miss 5-6. You know, those four teams.
Each other up.
They beat each other up.
And Darren, exactly what you're saying, right? They all have nets lower than 45.
Yep.
We're splitting hairs. And for me, looking at that, the only way I could do it was looking at the conference record and saying, okay, if you don't have four, I can't put you in. If you're not 4-8, I can't put you in. So at the moment, that's why Oklahoma and Arkansas are out for me. And I only have 12, and Georgia's one of those because they have four wins. Texas has four wins in conference. So, Kev, do you think?
I've got all, as of today.
Shocking.
I would have all 14 in. Okay. So I was trying to find a way to get 15 and 16 in, but.
Well, here's my delineation line, and everyone's going to look at something different, right?
Yeah.
Georgia 1-6 on the road, Arkansas 3-3. I like teams that can win a road game. I know it's a weird thing. It's just one of those stats I look at. Texas 3-4. I can live with it. Vanderbilt 2-4. Georgia at 1-6 stands out to me as a, their best win, St. John's. It's a great win. It looks better every day.
Yes, but, it does.
But they beat them by a point, a game that St. John's kind of blew. But I don't know. Like Mississippi State, for instance, 9-3 between road and neutral. You know, there's certain things I like about teams, and that's what I look at. But you can go anywhere with these 14 teams. You can go 11 teams. You can go 14, and nobody can argue with you. Oklahoma was one of the last teams in the country to lose, and I don't have them in. You know, it was Oklahoma, Drake, and Tennessee were the last three teams to have a loss going into the new year. It's crazy right now, guys.
Yeah.
So final thoughts on college basketball, Gino. What are you looking forward to over the next month? Is there a team you're eyeing to get in, or a team that you're thinking could drop out or anything like that?
West Coast Conference to me definitely is interesting between St. Mary's, Gonzaga, and San Francisco. ACC, I think, is going to be interesting as they come down to see if one of these, you know, teams other than the big three start pulling away from the rest of the pack and solidify themselves as the fourth team in, whether it's SMU or Wake or maybe Pitt. You know, North Carolina seems like they're now out based on the last couple of losses, but you never know. They get on a run. Who the hell knows? And then the other thing is we're going to have to keep an eye on the SEC on what the lower portion of the SEC winds up doing. Yep. And, you know, I don't know how they're going to delineate what the line's going to be, but, you know, if you start getting, if a couple of these teams, and I'll use the two teams that only have three wins right now, just as the examples, you know, Oklahoma and Arkansas, if those two teams, you know, don't only win one more game down the stretch, wind up being 4-11 in conference, that may be the deciding, that may be the deciding factor.
You know, to your point, a team like Arkansas, you know, if they do only get those, you know, one or two more conference wins and four losses, and you add in an early round exit, now you're sitting with them going, you know, they're 16-14 as a 14th place team. That's not good enough. I'm sorry. I have a big problem putting in. I know they've had some at-larges with 14, 15 losses, but to me, as a 14th best team in the conference with 14 losses, you're not getting in.
And Kev, we said this a couple weeks ago when we kind of touched on it when I said to you, you know, the only thing we got to look for is if these teams continue to just beat each other up, and the really good teams in the conference beat the bad teams in the conference, and it starts stripping away at their win total to the point where you just can't put them in at that point.
Yep.
But, you know, because the rest of the – because there are at least eight, you know, we just said it. We thought there were eight locks at this point.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. That's
some people might have nine, Gino. Some people might have missed it as a lock.
I don't, but they might.
I mean, because that's nine in the top 25.
And that's it. Because you have so many of those teams that are so good,
yeah,
even net losses don't look as bad on their resume as net, right?
They're all quad one, quad two that's losses it. For them.
They don't drop a lot. You don't drop a lot unless you lose to South Carolina in this league.
Whereas Villanova... If they get a loss against one of the other teams, not the top four,
it
kills their net. Exactly. It kills their net.
Just think about this, guys. If we talked about the Big Ten getting 10 teams in a normal year, we'd be going nuts about that. And that doesn't have a chance of equaling what the SEC has. Yeah. And the Big Ten has a legit shot to get 10 teams. It might get nine, might get eight, might get 11. But it could legitimately get 10. And we're not even talking about that because of how huge the SEC is right now.
Kev, what are you looking for, Kev, as we get down here now?
Again, it's overall, I think, the lack of mid-major bid stealers. I mean, there's a few more that we have in there in the mix. And I just don't see it except for those one or two that we mentioned.
Yeah,
you're going to leave plenty of bids for the big conferences, and it's going to be which one of these near right down the bubble line can either of them get hot in these next 3 or 4 weeks and carry that into their tournaments and work and win their way in, and do any of these other ones, you know, lose their way out?
Yeah,
I know it's very generic sounding, but you think back 5-10 years ago, there was a lot more talk with mid majors.
Absolutely,
it's become much more of a power conference tournament.
Well, we used to consider St. Mary's a mid-major, and now we kind of expect them in the dance every year. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean,
but look at the MAC. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, yeah, I'm going back to Manhattan, going 30 years ago. But even like the last couple of years, you know, Iona at least was, you know, outside looking in. But you know, you could have made a case if they didn't quite make the run in the MAC tournament.
The Missouri Valley used to get multiple bids every year.
Yeah. The MAC leader, I think, is Merrimack at like 180.
Yep.
I mean,
Maris, who leads the conference, is in the twos. I mean, you know, it's a mess.
I think the other thing we just need to remember with the SEC and the Big Ten getting a lot of bids this year is that you also don't have the Pac-12 in here, which was getting at least two or three, even if they weren't, fantastic teams. Yeah, exactly. They weren't, so it definitely opens up a couple of spots where, we're considering Arkansas and Oklahoma, where if the Pac-12 had a couple of teams that were high up in the rankings, there's no way we would, even have them in the equation. So, Darren,
what do you think that we look at? I mean, looking at the tournament right now, your 5-12s and your 6-11 and your 7-10, and, really those matchups are all going to be ridiculous. There's not going to be like that Cinderella you're looking to watch. You're going to see an Arkansas team, if they get in as a 12, going up against a 5 in, like, I don't know, let's say Illinois. And you know what? The spread's going to be like 2. It's going to be like
Calipari
versus Underwood. Which way are you going? A Texas team is going to get in as a 12, and they're going to sit there and battle a Creighton team as a 5, and you're going to be like, the spread's going to be pick 'em.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're looking at. That's the fun part of this.
Texas. Yep.
There are no – and listen, the 12 always upset the 5 a lot. We always saw that. It was always fun. But the fact of the matter is that outside of the 1 and 2 seeds, maybe the 3 seeds, there are no layups in any of these tournament. If you don't finish in the top 8, and you're not a 1 or 2 seed, you're going to go up against a really strong lower mid-major at 14 or 13, or you're going to go up against a power conference battle-tested team at 12. I mean, you're not going to get any crap there. Yep. San Francisco's considered crap, that all be it, but they're not. They play Gonzaga, they play St. Mary's, they play Washington State, Oregon State. They play teams that are at least good. They're battle-tested more than usual. This is what makes it exciting this year. I love the mid-major. Kevin and I are always going to be, we're romanticists about the mid-majors. Gino's always the realist, like, idiots. You want to see the best 68 teams. Stop it. No, I don't mean in a bad way.
No, but you
bring us back to reality. You're smarter about it than we are. I'm complimenting you on it.
But I do think in the past, there were a couple of those teams I wanted to see get a chance in. And this year, I kind of agree with Kev. Honestly, other than Memphis on that board, I don't really think any of those conferences that we went through are going to get 2 bids. I just can't see it. I mean, Drake goes out and loses in the semis. They're not getting in. And
only if they get to the final, in my opinion. I agree. But 28-3 is going to be hard to keep them out.
Darren, when you get to the Big West, you had mentioned it between, UC San Diego and UC Irvine. They basically have identical records. Their net is close. But at the end of the day, you're probably only getting one of those teams in.
Oh, I was just naming the teams that had a shot.
No, I know.
I only have one in also.
But in past years, we would have made a point of saying, listen, bubble watch with this team if they play well. And honestly, with all those 1B conferences, the only one at this point is Memphis that I could see getting in and not winning their conference at this point. So
VCU with the net of 37 is actually better than Memphis's net of 45 right now. Neither one of them are going to jump up because there's nobody good in any of these leagues.
Yeah.
Nobody helps them.
Yeah.
Winning out doesn't help them. They're probably going to drop anyway. That's how bad it is. So that's the problem. But you're right. I would say those two have the best chance. And if Drake lost but ran the table, would be the only way, if they lost a really competitive championship game, third game in 3 days type of crap.
Yeah.
Kind of it, though. I mean, but I'm looking forward to that. Always look forward to the Mountain West to see who the teams they get in there, because the league just is kind of fun. It's one of Gino's pet leagues, too. I always like watching that. We bet it every year together. So it's one of his pet leagues. And yeah, I think the ACC, if they get a 4th team or not.
Yep.
ACC getting 3 is realistic. Okay. So, and that's pretty much it. You guys have anything else before we wrap it up?
Nope.
All right. We are the sports. I'm sorry, Kev.
I was going to say, just touch on the women's a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about that. Yes.
Yeah, I know. So last week, we've had a couple of real good matchups here. Last Thursday, UConn travels down to Rocky Top and loses in Tennessee 80-76. Paige Beckers was held to 14 points on 5-for-16 shooting. Interesting, this Tennessee coach, and we've all got wives. We've all seen them give birth. This is one tough lady. Kim Caldwell is a coach there. Mm-hmm. She gave birth January 20th. She was back on the sidelines on the 27th. She's taking maternity leave after the season's over.
And taking the role of the Hurleys in women's basketball, watching Gino cry about the foul calls at the end of that game is freaking pathetic. Gino Auriemma is like, he's like an adopted Hurley.
The only one worse than him is Kim Mulkey from LSU.
Oh, she's a bad. It's hard for me to yell at a woman. I'm sorry. It sounded sexist. I shouldn't say that. I'll yell at women all day now.
Sunday, LSU then hosts Tennessee. They beat them 82-77. We had a really good matchup, top four matchup. South Carolina goes into Texas, never leads. Texas wins 66-62. Tessa Johnson, who was the MOP of the Final Four last year, missed a tying jumper with 19 seconds left. So looking at just the top teams, UCLA clear-cut 23-0, number one. Now it gets interesting. Number two is Notre Dame, 21-2. They've won 16 in a row. They lost early to TCU and Utah and the Cayman Islands in November. They've won 16 in a row. Texas is 24-2. They've lost at Notre Dame in overtime, at South Carolina. South Carolina is 4-22-2. They've lost at UCLA, at Texas. Five is LSU, 25-1. They've lost at South Carolina. See a pattern here? They're all beating each other up at the top.
They're all beating each other up.
USC, that number six, is 21-2. They've lost to Notre Dame, and they lost at Iowa, the only one that sneaks in there, but that was also Caitlin Clark's retirement. Jersey retirement ceremony. Seven is UConn. They're 22-3. They've lost at Notre Dame, home to USC, at Tennessee. So, you know, I think those seven teams are clearly the seven best. They've got the best chance of being in the final eight and the final four. This week, Thursday night, UCLA at USC. So that's a 1-6 matchup. And on Sunday, UConn travels to Colonial Life to take on South Carolina in a 7-4 matchup.
You act like anybody knows what Colonial Life is.
There it is. Watch YouTube. There it is.
Yes, absolutely. Everybody's saying, oh, we're taking a trip to Colonial Life. Everybody thinks they're going to an insurance place. What's going on?
And that's my quick look at women's.
All right. G, anything else before we wrap up?
No, that's it.
All right. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Gino, here with Kevin, talking about the wonderful, wild, wacky world of sports. A wacky world of sports where we can talk about women's college basketball and two of the three guys have no idea what's going on. Please download the podcast anywhere you can get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We're on social media a lot. We're posting a lot of clips up. Like them, share them, send them out. Let us know what you think. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.